Succession number 23447, Reel 2.
Mr. Waller, Reel 2. We're talking about your time at the Rifle Brigade Training Centre, Winchester Barracks, between September 1940 and round about October 1940.
Yeah.
What about, we were talking about weapons training.
Yeah.
What about bayonet training?
Yeah.
What level of bayonet training did you get or practice?
Well, I can remember our, most of the instructors were the same, but most of them were, done, were regulars who'd done their time out in India, that, you know, and came out with these gruesome stories, you know, how it, they don't like it up them and all that. And you were told, basically, how to fix the bayonet, or, as we used to be suitably corrected, your sword. And,
they still called it that.
They still called it the sword. And the high port position, and then of course you had the sacks of straw hanging on a wooden frame, and that's when you had to sort of, you stood in ranks, you know, and the first four went forward, did their lunge into the straw and out and away, and then the next length.
Did they teach you to twist still?
Yes, twist to get it out, because they always should tell you that if you can't get it out straight because the flesh clings to it, you know. So, all rather gruesome things to ex-civilians.
Were they still telling you to do a lot of shouting and screaming and bawling as you did it?
Yeah. Oh, yes, they were well up on that. That was the standard procedure. The corporal and the NCO used to go down screaming like mad, you know.
And you did?
Yeah, job. You had to do it as well.
Did you think bayonet would be important to you? I mean, because you know, they got machine guns and all the rest of it, and the bayonet's got a pretty short range.
Yeah.
Did you think it was relevant to modern warfare?
I don't think we really thought too much about it. I suppose we were thinking of what our father, the First World War. You know, if you knew anything about the war, it was First World War, when you had over the trough, and that you assumed that was the way it was going to be, you know. You hadn't come to terms with the idea that you were going to meet up with panzers and things like that. So you just assumed that that would be part of the training.
Did they teach you the sort of bayonet fencing level, you know, sort of bringing the butt through and that?
Well, the bit they used to teach you was, you know, if you lunge, how to parry when the opposition came at you, and how to parry and how to swing and use the butt of the rifle as a club, you know, to hit them on the head.
So you do a gesture, you'd parry with the front of your rifle and then
you go and you either knock, you parry with it, or you knock it to one side and then you swing with the round like that with the button.
Did you do much practice at that
No, limited, because everything was really being crammed in. As I say, you had 2 weeks by which time they got to convert you from a civilian to a reasonable soldier, teach you drill, all the various things. You had to learn bugle calls.
I'll come back to bugle.
Yep.
Let's go through the weapons one moment.
Yep.
What about hand grenades? Mills bomb. What sort of training did you do with them?
They used to take you out into the field, and usually where there was a number of pits or slit trenches, and you had to creep forward and then raise yourself on one knee and hurl it and try to get it in there.
Did they have a specified manner you were meant to throw it?
Yes.
Still this overarm cricket style thing?
That's right, yes. One arm back and sort of long throw, really.
That's a straight arm, basically.
Yeah.
Well, do you know why it had to be a straight arm, or...?
No, except all I know, it seemed to work. You could get distance with it by being
about
strong.
About how
far?
Roughly.
40, 50 yards, I suppose.
Because they're heavy, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a Mills grenade. Oh, wow.
And did they take you through how to fuse it and the rest of it?
Yeah. It used to take you how to undo it, and told you, you can either get instantaneous if you use them as a booby trap, or 4 minute or 7 minute fuses.
Second. 4 second or seven.
4 second, yes, right. Yes.
And did you throw any live ones at that stage?
No. No.
What about general machine guns? Did you have any of the submachine guns, either the Thompson or might be a bit early for the Sten or any?
No, Bren gun.
So you no submachine gun, just
no.
Tell me about the Bren, not the Lewis then.
No, Bren guns.
Tell me about the Bren gun tree.
Well, that is the one where you used to get the lessons, and that was a lecture room thing, where he used to put one on this display and then start. Take the tripod off, pull the bits out, pull it back. The butt bit used to slide back from the front bit, and you lifted out the firing mech underneath it. And they used to tell you, show you how to strip them down, and then you all took turns in doing it, how quick you could strip a Bren gun and reassemble it. And because in the background they used to have a big poster up of the different parts in the Bren gun, so that whilst you're watching him, you could look and see whether he was doing it in the correct order, who was the best boy in the class to get it done.
They didn't actually do it blindfold, though.
Later on, but not a Winchester, no.
And what about actually firing a Bren? Did you get a go on it, and what did you think of it? Because it's quite well-known weapon.
Yeah. The only thing I found, it was very good, but I wasn't aware of this fact until later when we were in action, is if anything, they were too accurate. Because a good Bren gunner fired in bursts of about 5 or 6 rounds. And as I say, you could put them through a very small thing.
I'll ask now. We'll come back to it possibly for an accident. What was the problem with it being too accurate? You just explain for them.
Yeah. Well, when you've got infantry or coming at your channel, you want to spray. You can cover a wider round. Whereas with a Bren gun, you could fire a short burst and put 4 rounds through the same chap, which you didn't hit either side. You hadn't got the swing. Not like a Spando. I mean, we only found that out once we got into the desert when they were using the spray.
So that was a bit of a disadvantage. What was it like to fire other than that?
It was a very good gun, very good. And the advantage of being, when I say too accurate, was if you were firing at a pillbox or somebody in a house in a window, then they were very good. Once again, the disadvantage comparing them with Spando. Bren gun fired about 600 rounds a minute. Spando fired about 1,000, 1,200.
Could you fire the Bren? Did you practice? I mean, they could fire the Bren gun from the hip.
Apparently. Oh, yes.
Did they practice that, or was that something you learnt later?
No, you didn't actually do that on the range, but you were told, you ran along with it, but you didn't actually fire rounds.
And what about stoppages? What stoppages was it prone to? Clearance easy?
Yeah, they fairly easy. There was a set procedure, where misfire, didn't go, pull back the bolt, eject the round and so forth, take the magazine off in case it jammed there. And because they'd already taught you how to fill a magazine, load the magazine.
How did you do that?
You did it by hand, just got so many rounds, and they would bring a box along, but usually they would bring on 50 rounds or something, and you got this curved magazine, and then you push them in one at a time, pressing them down with your thumb and loading them.
Now what about, were you introduced to the heavy machine gun? I mean, I know you wouldn't be, the Vickers.
No, I never touched a Vickers, but later on, when you got to Tibworth, they began to sort you out what you would be on.
I will come back to that. Yep. So you just saw the Bren at Winchester?
Basically at Winchester. It was rifle, grenade and the Bren.
What about the 2-inch mortar or the 3-inch mortar?
That was later on.
Later on, right. Those are the only weapons you saw. So you'd have training sessions, then lunch, more training sessions.
Yeah.
What did you think of your instructors?
Well, they're all right. They used to use the old kidology. They were all regulars who most probably been in India or places abroad. And it was all right, you know. They're all aiming to win the best platoon award, you see. And you play the game with me and I'll play the game with you, you know. But if you don't, I can be an horrible so-and-so. Usual pattern that you see on the old films. But it's quite true. And
were they fair in the way they treated
you? Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, they had, bearing in mind, they had a difficult job. It was 8 weeks to convert you from a civilian into a reasonable type of soldier before getting posted on to the motor training battalion.
Was there much swearing? Did they swear at you?
I wasn't really aware of it. Strangely enough, the language in those days wasn't as bad as it is today. And I had this out with Jim Clayton. He tended to put in the F word, and I said, well, it wasn't a word of its time. You know, you might say, you know, bloody, bleeding, things like that, but not the sort of language you hear off of the young ladies in the pub today. It was amazing. And so whether they were restricting themselves, I don't know, but no, they weren't. It was more these expressions, you know, when they, what's on parade, you know, I'm saying, am I, when they stood behind you, am I hurting you? No, Sergeant, well, I should be able to stand on your bloody hair, get your hair cut, you see, that type of thing. Or, you know, how tall are you? 5'10". I didn't know they stacked crap that high. All the lovely endearments that go with it. But, you know, I suppose they didn't want to frighten the life out of you, because not knowing military law, there was always the one or the two said, I've had enough of this, and buggered off and went home, you see. And they had to wait for the red caps to pick them up.
What other training did you have? You mentioned the bugle calls.
Yeah.
What were you learning? Were you learning to play the bugle or just
learning
the calls?
No, you had to learn. You see, each company had its own bugle call. I mean, easy enough. You quickly learned rouse or reveille, cookhouse and thing, standard one. But each company had its own call, and jankers and at the double. And the way you did it was, they always had little ditties. I mean, B Company was, old John Brown was a regimental man, so you learned the little ditty that went with it. Because unless you were a musician, you didn't know which call was which, you see. And that's how, as a civilian, you learn army bugle calls. They used to tell you which little ditty went with it.
Do you remember any more of them? Or?
Well, of course, everybody else would come to the cookhouse doorboys, and there was B Company. Double one went, but I'll be quite honest, I can't. You concentrated on whatever section or company you were in. You learned it. You weren't worried about the others.
You were B Company, were you?
Yeah.
And what other training did you have? I mean, we've done the weapons training.
Yeah.
What about sort of route marches, things like that?
Yeah, after about 4 weeks, you did a 30-mile route march.
Now, were you going at light infantry pace?
On the parade ground you were, from the word go, on the parade.
Tell me, we'll do that first. What can you explain what light infantry pace was, and how tough was it for you?
It was 140 to the minute, which killed you in the calves of your leg, particularly the taller you were, the worse it was. And, you were marching with the rifle at the trail, which meant it was pointed out long, you holding it in the hand, and it was level with the ground. And that was hard, I say, on the backs of your legs, it killed you at first, but it took you 3 or 4 weeks to get a painless system of doing that. And you also, on the Saturday mornings, you went round, marched past 140, and then you did it at the double.
So how fast was we?
Double was about 180. So you began to wonder whether you joined the right unit. You say, well, you didn't actually.
You hadn't had a choice, had you?
No, you hadn't picked a unit.
What about route marches? Would you go at the light infantry pace on that?
No, you did just a steady pace, a normal pace on that while you were on the march.
What was the routine on a drill, a route march? How, you're 13 miles, you said.
Yeah.
Quite a way.
Pardon?
That's quite a way.
Yeah. And you had, didn't have your big pack, you had your small pack, which is called battle order, and your webbing, and your rifle, and so forth. And you marched off properly, so until you got clear of the city at Winchester, you got outside. And then it was, you slung your rifle over your shoulder, you know, held it on the sling.
So you only had it at the trail while you were in sight.
Yeah, and then you put it on your shoulder, and you did that. And then when you came back, when you got about 2 miles from the barracks, which were actually in the city, you know, they were just on the edge of the city at that time. They're still there, but the band was waiting for you. Well, the bugles and part of the band, and you stopped for a minute, and they said, right. Because by then, your first route march, you know, you were a bit shattered, and it was strike up, and you sort of marched in, you pulled yourself up, and it's amazing what the band, you know, how it sort of, and then you marched in till you got about half a mile from the barracks, and then they started, then they broke into the 140 metres in a minute, and you went down to the trail, and you marched in, you know, mustn't.
Had you had the regular breaks every hour? You know, the 10 minutes an hour. Did they still do that, or did you not get them?
No, you had one break. You marched out, had one break, and then marched back.
What about tactical training or field craft or you know?
Not in Winchester.
So none of that?
No.
What other trainings do you remember at Winchester? You know, I know it's only 8 weeks. So
yeah. As I say, they really had to show you how to lay out your kit, keep the barracks thing. Really, they were trying to get you used to discipline. You got PT, weapon training, which comprises, as I say, rifle, brain gun, grenade, and then you had your parades, and you got one 48-hour leave in between at the weekend. But
how did you get on with your fellow recruits then? I should have asked you earlier.
Yeah, I got on all right with them, and I made one particular friend who I remained until he died last year. He was a London barrow boy, and we got down there, and the end of the first week, you remember, the rate of pay was 2 shillings a day, and you got paid fortnightly. So you got 2 shillings a day once a fortnight, less barrack room damages, stoppages, and widow and orphans funds, and it was 2 shillings. And then, of course, you might have made allowance home, as I did. Half, 7 of my 14 shillings went to my mother, which left 7 shillings. 2 shillings were deducted for these stoppages, which means I got 5 shillings a week, which I got 10 shillings a fortnight. So the first payday, they came in and said, right, pay parade. There was another thing there to tell you how you saluted at the pay table and the correct procedure. And this barrow boy was there. He said, oh, I'm not going to bother. And we all went off, and the corporal came back. Oh, by that time I'd gone back. He said, Watkins, I told you to get on pay parade. He said, I'm not going to bother for 10 bob. He said, I've got 50 quid in my pocket. Bang, you're on the charge.
Why did you particularly like this bloke, the Barry? What
well, what it was, it was a barry boy thing. One day, just the two of us were in the barrack room, I think it was a nappy break, and he said to me, would you do me a favour? If I can, what? He said, would you read me this letter? He couldn't read or write. He could write tuppence a pound, for bananas or whatever, but he couldn't read and write. The army taught him to read and write. So I read his letter, and he said, well, you know, I want to write a reply. Would you mind writing? And that's how I got to know him. And we remained pals, you know, until last year.
Did you make many pals at the time? I mean, he's obviously someone who you just stuck with right through.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, there was...
Were they the same sort of background as yourself, or was there a lot of working... You know,
oh, no.
You were more middle class, if you like. They were.
I mean, one of the chaps I knew quite well, but lost... Some of them I kept in touch with after the war, so I didn't. You know, you might have somebody who was a chief clerk or assistant bank manager. You might have somebody who was a barrow boy. Might have somebody like myself who's just a clerk. They were a mixed range. And see, bearing in mind that at the age of 20, not many people had gone up the ladder of success. But I can't remember what the age was when they started off. You know, it was 20 and, say, 26, and then 20 and 27.
Any bullying?
I know, I didn't come across any. Didn't come across any. Sort of lost souls all seemed to crowd together, and everybody was okay.
Now, anything else about, you know, your training period there at Winchester?
No, obviously, one thing you should mention, when you went there, you weren't allowed out of the barracks for, was it the first week or first 2 weeks? Until your kit, see, when you got your kit, you had to polish your webbing and blanco your kit, and until it got to a required standard, you were not allowed out the barrack gate. So it was about a week to 2 weeks before you were allowed out to go into town. And I think that coincided with your first payday. I say you got paid at the end of a fortnight.
So what would you do when you went into Winchester?
Yeah, well, depending whether you were a good Christian, you either went to the cinema or you went to the pub. Because in those days, although you only got 10 shillings for a fortnight, a glass of beer used to be threepence in those days. Threepence for half a pint. And players' cigarettes were, you know, sixpence for 10, 11pence halfpenny for 20.
So, you were a pub man, I would judge.
Yeah. We learnt, we used to go down, or some of them, of course, went down eyeing up the local talent and trying to sort of score there, but...
Was there any trouble with any of the local lads? You know, I mean, because sometimes the army can go into a town and people get jealous of the girls, fancy them.
No, we didn't have any trouble, no. Whether that was due to the fact that that was a peacetime base, you know, Rifle Brigade were always there. It was, well, they got the freedom of the city eventually, but whether it was because they were always used to them being there and always used to being in town. And I suppose the barracks being in the town, say there's a main shopping bring up to one side, that I think it was, you know, you've got to behave yourself because otherwise you just will not be not only welcome but not be allowed to go to the cinemas or the pubs or anything else. And I think it's just...
Did you get on yourself? Did you get on well with the civilians? Or
were they
friendly?
No problem. But as I say, you didn't go out every night anyway. For the first fortnight, you were not allowed out, and then weeknights, by the time you finished the training and you got your meal and all that, and the amount of money you had available, I mean, it was more weekends.
What about canteen?
Oh, yeah, you had the naffy canteen.
What was that like? What did it offer you?
Yeah, usual. You could get your usual tea and cakes, you know, char and water, as they used to say, and you always got a naffy break in the middle of training in the morning, and then, of course, you can go there. You could go there in the evening and get the usual.
Was it a wet canteen? I mean, could you get a drink
there? Yes, yeah. But as I say, it was really a question of money, you know, how much money have you got, you know.
Did they have sort of games and stuff in there for you? Snooker or darts or anything like that? Billiards?
No, it was just a basic place where you could go and sit down, and they had a dartboard, that was the limit, yeah. Because that came in very useful later on. I've always played darts, but I used to practice there, and I got in with this barrow boy who was red hot. And when we moved on to...
Okay, well, at the end of the 8 weeks, which would be roughly early October, about?
Yeah.
Was there any sort of passing out parade or any sort
of
assessment?
Oh, yes, you did get an assessment, but you did a passing out parade.
What was that like?
It was all right. You went up to the top square where you used to do the adjutant's parade every Saturday, and you were passed out, and, you know, your instructor was saying, you know, what a good show, don't let me down, and all this, and, you know, by that time they'd instilled some regimental pride into you, and you were out to beat the others, or at least be equal to them. You weren't going to let your instructor down or yourself down. And
so where were you sent then?
Down to Tibworth.
And who were you joining there?
Well, it was called the 2MTB, which was the 2nd Motor Training Battalion. So it was still Rifle Brigade, but it was Motor Training Battalion.
And this is Tidworth Barracks?
Yeah.
Actually in the main barracks or in the camp?
No, we were in the barracks.
And what was the difference when you arrived there? That the whole draft went, did it?
Yeah.
And what do you remember of your reception there? And how was it different from the recruitment?
Well, it was different in as much that instead of being on the edge of a town, you were in the middle of nowhere. We got the sort of Salisbury Plain area and all that type of thing, you know. It was a very large, immense size, the barracks there, and they were all different regiments. I mean, we were, Rifle Brigade were in sort of $1 blocks, and then across the road there might be Royal Armoured Corps, and as I say, different regiments were allocated, different ones, you know.
And how did the training start there?
Well, on a similar sort of system, but much more seriously. And you went through the same things, but at a more advanced stage there. And that's when you started doing your field training, you know, going out.
Let's talk about field training. Mm. So what sort of field training did you do? How did it start?
Well, you'd be told that you were going to a X point on the map, and you'd be loaded into 1,500 weight trucks, kitted out in battle order, and you'd be going off. And they started off by you sat down, and they say, "Well, now that is a copse, that is a wood," and you learnt the different distinguishing signs. So that you knew you could read a map. That's what they were doing, you know. That sign is a church, and that is over there. And they took you through initially map reading, and from the ground level, pointing them out from the start, how to advance undercover, things like that. You know, you were given with no opposition. You just been shown how to use the ground and use the bushes and advance and so forth.
To keep out of sight.
Yeah. And, excuse me. And that was how your initial training started. You,